So I'm on the set of Walking Dead, and I get a text, and it's just Pat, and he's like, "Hey, I got an idea for a thing. I want to run it past you. Can we get in? Should we get into the plot? Should we start?" And he's like, "It's two girls, and they're part of a cult, and they are trapped, and their dad isn't their dad." And I call him up immediately, and I'm like, "'Cause they're werewolves." And he's like, "Yes, yes, 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 yes." And like, we just spun out from there, and like every phone call was like, just, "Oh, but what about this happening? And what if this happens?" And then like it just grew, and it flew out of our fingertips. We never had the moment where we're like, "Well, we're stuck in a corner now. We painted ourselves into this corner. How do we write ourselves out?" Like, it just flew out of our fingertips. The outline, the script, the dialogue, like it all just flew out. And it was one of the fastest writing experiences I ever had, and also just like so fun, because every time it was just like, "Yes, dude, why not?"
So how we started this thing, right, is we kind of developed the characters out. We talked a little bit about, you know, who these girls were that were in this house that was locked away, and fleshed out all the descriptions and all that. Then we did like a beat sheet. And then we did another outline, like a full-fledged outline that almost looked a lot like the script, with literal scene headings and action points and some dialogue in it, and actually some full scenes, right? And then you would come back with pages, and you'd be like, I've done 20 pages. And I'm like, what do you mean? And then I get a phone call. I'm like, oh, shit, this is going to be great. And then you just walk me through these pages, and I am pacing, so engaged and so excited about what's on the page. And then we, you know, our collaboration, "Oh, what if you did this? What if we did that?" And it concluded in these like really well-painted scenes. It really has a Hollywood feel to it. It's a blockbuster film in every sense of the word.
Yeah. I would say it's a blockbuster film, but drawing a lot of information, a lot of inspiration from like crap 80s horror.
Yes.
I'm wearing a Chopping Mall shirt right now, which is like one of my favorite crap 80s horror movies.
I told Aaron he looks like a walking video store horror movie shelf with the old VHSs. Yeah. Like,
well, and like that's some of my favorite horror. So it's like, it's what if you took some of this like schlock and cheese and polished it up to be like this blockbuster movie? So there's like all this great over the top gore, and like werewolves are ridiculous, like cinematic creatures anyway, but like the family ties and all these character pieces are very big blockbuster sort of in concept. So I think that's spot on. Is it's like, it feels very big, it's very epic, but also has its roots in sort of a nod to like old VHS horror.
Yeah, I really did. And I think RoboCop came up a lot. Yes. Just that tone of that film. Mm-hmm. And we were like, well, you know, while we're writing it, we had that kind of tone in our minds, which is, you know, how hard it was to sell through RoboCop to studios. It was like, it's such a different, unique voice and a very unique world. We didn't really care. We didn't care if people get it, right? And the tone, because we know the tone, and we know others will get it because the two of us got it without even having to like have that conversation. We actually came to that conclusion that it was just like that in tone.
Yeah.
And we don't really care who gets it, because, you know, the person who gets it will be the one to like really be the right person to produce it and follow it through and collaborate with, and its journey to the screen.
Absolutely. And like RoboCop's such a great one, because I mean, I'm obsessed with RoboCop. I got RoboCop in one of my tiers on my shelf back here.
So great.
It was such a perfect satire, and it's one of those weird movies that like Paul Verhoeven is one of the only guys who could have pulled it off. Mm-hmm. And I think he was so weird that they just left him alone, and it worked. And it's just, that movie and Starship Troopers are so perfect in that satire, where it's like, he made a very serious movie, mm-hmm. but the winks and the nods, he's not looking directly at camera and being like, "Wink, haha, isn't that funny? Or isn't that a joke? Or is that, you know," that was the point of satire. And I thought it was so well done and so razor edge. And then suddenly you get to like the commercials of RoboCop, and it's like a claymation dinosaur chasing a car called the Sucks 9000. SUX 9000.
We're not like, that crazy. We're not like that far out with this, I think. Yeah. But like in the world, I think, is most like RoboCop. In the world we create, where everybody lives and interacts, and what's going on in the world is very, very similar. I mean, there's freaking werewolves among us. That's just like, they're kind of that underneath, like underground in like the Bigfoot way.
Yeah. And I love werewolf films, and I've watched a million of them, and I've read a lot of werewolf literature. I have a couple books on here that have werewolves in them, and it's interesting, because all werewolf films and all werewolf books almost purely deal with the idea of the curse. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite things on my podcast, I got to talk to one of the writers of Batman comic books, the Nightfall series, when Batman gets his back broken and Bane shows up. And the writer of that said, werewolfism is like a cancer, but instead of killing you slowly, it kills the people around you slowly. Mm. And I thought that was amazing, Every single werewolf movie does the curse. Mm-hmm. And it was like, well, let's take that out of it. Let's do something where instead of a curse, it's almost like a superpower. And we wanted to just come at it from a different angle so that it's not the same werewolf movie. It's actually made it very freeing to not have to worry about the curse of it all and focus on like people being miserable because they're werewolves. It was actually kind of like a discovery and like a freeing thing to suddenly be like, oh, this is what I am, which is so unique to that genre.
Yeah, I feel like it's an extremely unique take. And when I approached this with you and we were talking werewolves and creating this werewolf screenplay and this werewolf film, I like some werewolf films. Like I like American Werewolf and those films. And I just found that I hadn't seen a really good werewolf movie in a really long time. And I was turned off by the subgenre of werewolf films. Yeah. So this really, really excited me because not only do we bring that angle to it, but we also brought the humanity of werewolves to it. It's very emotional. There are extremely emotional moments.
Yeah. It focuses on these two sisters and a lot of like the family angle. And I'm a new father. I have a 1-year-old daughter and, you know, trying to draw some of my anxieties and fears into it helps make a good horror script, and them not knowing who their real father is. And the thing I was trying to impress is like, we're surrounded by media at all times now. And it is kind of disconcerting to be like, what is raising my daughter? Is it my influences or is it something coming from the TV or the internet? And obviously she's one, she's not on the internet and not watching TV. But as she gets older, that is something I'm worried about. So this idea of this fake father involved was something that was really fun to play with in the script, because that was where I could pump a lot of these anxieties of like a father being worried about who's raising his daughters for real. And I thought that was fun. That was very cool and fun to explore that.
You make a really good point there that there are so many parallels. It's such a relevant screenplay as well, because by not giving too much away about the story, because I would like, it's definitely a screenplay that's meant to be read, you know, from start to finish and experienced from start to finish, because there are so many twists. There are so many moments that just are just boom, you know, it changes your perception. What's going on? Oh, this is not happening. This, you know, those great twists, so many of them. Yeah. We just really fucked with readers and audiences with this thing. It's so much fun to do. But you make a really good point, because not only is there this like fake father, but that media influence, right? The media feeding you now what they want you to hear based on their ideology, their angles. This is very much that kind of story, because these girls are in this house with this fake father, right? And they're being fed what he decides to feed them, because they've never seen the outside world. So, you know, down to like what's being on television, like the newscasts he's actually creating a world outside of their world, and they only know this world of inside their four walls. That's not what the world is like outside. So it's to be expected, right, in that blast from the past kind of moment, is like when you get out, it's nothing like you thought. Oh, and by the way, it's really not what you thought, because you're not who you thought you were. So there's that really strong moment there. But crafting that media narrative is very much a part of this story as well.
It was really fun to come together, man. I think it was just one of those scripts that, just, like I said, just flew out of my fingers, and it was fun to collaborate. And many times I've had a fun idea and started, you know, beating out pieces of it. And then you just get like worked into a corner where you're like, well, I don't know where this goes from here. And then you leave it in a box for the for its duration. It just never finishes. And I'm so glad we never hit that corner and we never got sidetracked long enough to just lose what it was. And it's out, you know, and winning competitions and finalizing in competitions and like that.
And we're not even started yet. I mean, this is the start. I mean, we've been submitting, but we've got so much ahead of us here. Like we on the tail end, we caught some last tail end festivals, like some of the monthlies and stuff like that. But we've been overall winning and getting really great responses, and just the overall response is like, this is a ride, right? You know, everybody reads it, not just contests or people reading it from judges, but also just readers, because we sent it to a lot of people beforehand for notes, which we got. Chris O'Brien was one of the big ones, and I mention him a lot as someone who reads all my stuff, but like he gave really great notes. But the general consensus is like, no matter what you think of it or what notes were given, which many of which we implemented because we thought they were great, it's a ride. It's like a real true ride from start to finish.
Well, and I always say I don't like real roller coasters. I hate heights and none of that. Going
this is the second best thing.
Yeah, going to an amusement park is not fun for me. That does not sound like a good time. So it's like, I like movies to be a ride. Mm-hmm. When a movie can take you on that ride, then I'm here for it. And it's like, you want the ups and downs, and you want the swings, and you want the moment where you raise your hands and go, woo, yeah!
Yeah, this is that screenplay. Like, this is emotionally and viscerally, this is that movie.
And I've had multiple people afterwards tell me they think it would be an awesome adult animation done in the style of Love, Death, and Robots or something like that, like mm-hmm. a really like a high-end animation or like an anime mm-hmm. Or comic book. And you mm-hmm. and I have both mm-hmm. thought comic book.
Yep,
and
you
and
I
have been, to see this thing.
We've been talking about comic book. I think that's – it really is our – I mean, we want to do the festival thing this year, but I really – we are going to do this and find a way to get this made as a comic book because it's the perfect comic book series, right? This title of the screenplay is Daughters of the Moon First Phase. This is the first phase in a series of installations that will just keep going. That's what I love about it. It was the perfect built-in, not just sequel ending, but like the perfect built-in like entire franchise set up at the end.
Yeah, we're really tying into that universe there.
We really are. We really
universe
created
building.
We got it. We created a universe. We didn't just create. We really just didn't create like a world. We created a universe because this is endless. It's truly endless.
It's a werewolf story. It certainly is, but in a way that makes it more of a superhero story, or like the Incredible Hulk. Remember that old TV show, Lou Ferrigno TV show. Yeah. Every episode, the Hulk would go to some place, find some injustice, turn into the Hulk, smash some shit up, and leave. And it's like you could do that with werewolves and a family of werewolves. Like, come on. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be amazing.
I'm super excited about that.
It takes some influence from Walking Dead style episodic because the zombies are here, then they travel to another place and then there's more zombies and then but not only the zombies, but like there are other communities that are helping to fight the zombies. Right. But we kind of turned that on its head and we created now it's inverted, right? The werewolf communities that they're looking for are the communities that the humankind are sort of afraid of, but they need to find others like themselves to actually fight against humanity and the injustices and the darkness of humanity instead.
When we're talking about werewolf movies, and you said most of them have been pretty disappointing, what do you think have been, I mean, I think American Werewolf in London is universally the best werewolf movie, right?
Mm-hmm. I think so. I really do, because it does deal with that emotion of, and it didn't, I don't think it tries to do that, right? I don't think it tries to force emotional resonance on the viewer, but just inherently you've got these two buddies, right? Going, you can relate, these two guys going through the country backpacking. Like, I've been on trips with my best buddy through the country and one of them happens to be attacked by a werewolf, right? And then, he turns, but then he develops a relationship with a girl he loves. And then he's forced to have to find out, well, how do I have a relationship as a werewolf, and all of that. But also that body horror of turning into a werewolf, no other film has done that better.
In my opinion, the best transformation. But again, werewolf movies always focus on the transformation and the curse. And it's they're bogged down in them. And look, if you can't pull off American Werewolf in London, or do something to make that transformation different or exciting, then you're not there yet. And that's always one of the biggest problems with a lot of werewolf movies is they try to do this long drawn out transformation. It's like, we saw it, we did it. It was in the best one, so you can't do that again. And I've seen very cool late phases had a really cool transformation, but it's hard to do them well. And American Werewolf in London has one of my favorite conventions of his dead friend who keeps showing up and he's like, "Hey, dude, you got to kill yourself."
It's great.
And it's like every time you see him, he's more and more rotten, and I love it.
It's
so
great. It's
much.
Very very similar to a King kind of approach to things like Pet Sematary, where he dies and comes back. Even It, you've got being taunted by a dead person, but then even going back to Shakespeare, right? Because the roots of that, of the ghost, right, as a character coming back to inform someone else. I love that about that film and other films. While we don't have that in this story, a lot of things that, going back to your question about what I don't like about the werewolf genre is just the monotony of it. It's the same thing, right? where someone transforms, right? Attacks this person, right? They have to deal. They're a werewolf. They go out into the night. They turn, yada, yada, yada. Like, how many transformations do we have in Daughters of the Moon first phase? Like, how many transformations? Like, a ridiculous amount of transformations. We use the rules of werewolf, right, culture and werewolf, like, lore, and we really turn those on its head, and we explore those, but we enhance those, but we also, like, come up with fun things to, like, exploit those traditional tropes.
Yeah, and you don't have to make a meal out of it. I mean, right. At this point, we know what the transformation looks like, and I think it's important to have a cool one in a werewolf movie, but don't try and make it the centerpiece of your film, because that moment has been done.
Yep.
And it's like that's really important when thinking about this. And it's like, you know, I've watched countless number of werewolf movies, and they're all very similar, you know, and some better than others. I love The Howling too. The Howling's a great one, Joe Dante, with also pretty good transformation effects. But that movie is super weird, because at first it's like it's a serial killer movie, and then it's like, and now it's a werewolf movie. But then it's also a cult movie, and you're like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
But like the werewolves are cool, and you get multiple werewolves at the end. There's a whole cult of werewolves, which is really cool. Don't watch any of the sequels. Your Sister is a Werewolf is good if you want to laugh, but not that good of a movie. And the marsupial, like it goes downhill after the first one.
I think one of my most fun moments of this screenplay for Daughters of the Moon was inventing ways where the baddies could destroy werewolves, like this new technology that they have that they've developed in order to, like, not just to catch these werewolves, but like turn them back into human form. And we invented, I just want to discuss this because this is just so much fun. We invented an object, like a weapon that they've created and honed, and it's the first weapon of its kind I've ever seen in a film. It's the light cannon.
The light cannon, dude.
Talk about the light cannon, Aaron. Talk about the light cannon, because it's one of my favorite things ever.
So this appeared after one of the nights where you're like, I've been writing all night, and you popped up, and suddenly, like, these hunters had light cannons, and they're bazookas that fire out blasts of light, and it was so... Like, I was like, that is awesome. So immediately we were playing with ideas of how to do it. And, you know, they have these bazookas that fire like a sunlight blast that like renders the werewolf human for a brief moment. Like it just shocks them, shocks their system because of the fast transformation. It leaves them rocked, and then they can capture them. And then we have a whole scene at the end where like they're kicking one around and it's sliding around the guts of a bunch of people they've killed. And the light cannon's going off, and werewolves are like, their legs are turning human and they're falling over, and their arm turns human, and they're like spazzing out.
It's a dead alive, like, lawnmower moment.
Lawnmower scene. Yeah. So this light cannon was such a cool thing, because I've never seen it before. You know, we've seen similar things in vampire movies, but it was a great way to have this mobile stun gun, but just like so over the top in a way that fit into our script. That was really cool, man. I think it's a great addition, and I hope we get to see what these look like one day. I'd love to have one on my wall, like, you know, the light cannon.
As the prop, you know, like the prop light cannon.
Yeah, exactly, the prop light cannon.
You know, yeah, it will happen. I mean, like, its story is so unique, like, it's just about finding the right partner, but it will happen. It's so exciting, and that was a fun part for me, was creating those weapons, like, against the werewolves. But the other thing that was fun for me was also, like I said, exploiting those tropes of werewolfdom, whatever you like to call them. Right.
Yeah.
And using those to, like, propel the emotional narrative of the story, like their heightened sense of smell, their, you know, how does that connect with a father that's been searching, a werewolf father that's been searching for his werewolf daughter for years? How do those connect? Right. And how does he find her? And you and trying to piece those puzzle pieces together to try to, you know, create that world of, like, oh, this makes sense now after all these years. This is why he finally is able to find her again. Right. And we used those tropes and those things to, like, propel that emotional.
One of the ones that was tricky and interesting to navigate while we were writing this was, what does the moon do? Mm-hmm. You know, how does the moon work? The rules of the moon.
And the phases of the moon, yeah.
Phases of the moon, exactly. And, you know, we stuck with the light of the moon purely. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just, like, if you're inside, you can avoid the light. You could potentially stay human. But you get hit with that light, you transform into a wolf. And then, you know, there's like a residual pattern to it. Like, you know, once you go inside, it takes a second, but then you detransform. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. Because
being charged. It's like the light charging
like a glow-in-the-dark sticker.
Exactly. Yeah. It's charging you as a werewolf, and then you can only stay charged for so long before you start turning.
But it was very interesting, and I always love this idea that in the full moon, you're an all fours big American Werewolf in London beast monster. But then like a half moon, you are the Universal Studios werewolf, like on your bipedal. You know, it's Teen Wolf style where you kind of have a wolf face and you kind of have wolf claws, but you're half man, half wolf. Mm-hmm. And then when there's no moon, you just might need to shave a little bit. It has phases to it that affect how it looks. So that way throughout our movie, you have different sort of visions of werewolves doing different things. And I think that's an interesting approach. A lot of work,
But the funniest thing we were trying to solve, I think, to me, was like, okay, once they turn into werewolves and then they turn back into humans, what are they wearing?
Yeah.
someone wrote that. I'm like, really? So we actually had to spend hours trying to figure out like, how do we describe their state when they transform back to human? Because obviously when they're werewolf, they're bigger, their clothes rip. So what do we decide on? Like shredded, tattered clothes,
or we describe them grabbing something and covering up.
Like, or naked, or even naked. I mean, there's some moments where they're naked, but like they're covered by, but like we had to actually think of that each time the transformations happened, or describe it enough so like when they happened, people were like not thinking, oh, why is this person walking naked into XY?
Naked for the whole scene.
Yeah. We had to describe that, but you know.
Yeah, we didn't really want to have like a Corman level of like 70s nudity riding around in this. It's like, you know, that would really take you out of like the family moment. Like, hey, I met my dad for the first time, naked, awkward. So yeah, we had to come up with like what happens after they transform. It's like the Hulk shorts. Like, how does his purple shorts always fit him? You know?
Yeah. So, exactly. But yeah. I think again, you suspend your disbelief. You know, try to
make it work. Yeah,
make it work.
Well, and how do the werewolves talk to each other?
Yes, but that was one of my other favorite things, and we don't like force this, right? It's not like a forced thing that's like used a lot, because I don't think it's a thing that like we wanted to make a thing, right? Like, but we did want them to have, and I did do a lot of research, and you knew this from your leather-bound werewolf books, you know, on your shelf behind you. You knew that like werewolves can telepathically communicate with one another, which I personally don't remember ever seeing in a werewolf film of them using that skill. That
it's in books and stuff, and like more like, you know, werewolf RPGs and things like that. And I think when you just look at animals, like how they communicate, like wolves know how to work as a group. They know what to do. They know, hey, I'm going to stand here and distract this guy. You guys all sneak up behind him. Mm-hmm. So I think there's definitely some form of communication. Well, I don't think in nature telepathy would be the word, but in cinema and when you're dealing with magic and stuff, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Let's roll with it. But also do it in a way that doesn't feel cheesy and terrible, because I think it could easily be like, nah, stupid. And you're like, you know, you don't want it to be cheesy. You don't want to feel, but we needed some form of communication that worked. And I hope that you can do that in a way that is subtle, but also communicates exactly what you're trying to get.
Yeah, and all of these skills that the daughter that escapes and, you know, reunites, and we're giving so much away, but I don't really care, because I think it's just nice to like talk a little about the story. And, you know, if you want the full experience, read the screenplay. Another nice thing was that it had that Hook moment, right? Like Peter Banning in Hook has been gone from Neverland for so long that he forgets how to fly. He forgets how to fight. He forgets how to crow, all of that fun stuff. Mm. The best thing.
Bang-a-rang.
I love Hook. The best thing about that and about this that have a lot of similarities is and I think there are a lot of, actually, we talked about this too. There's weird similarities to Hook in this. I don't even know, like.
My dog Rufio is sitting
Rufio,
right
behind Rufio! 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 Yeah, Rufio. There's weird similarities and comparisons to Hook, but like one of the big ones is that like she's lost her gift as a werewolf. She doesn't remember, like she was a baby when she was taken, right, from this fake father and grown in the society to create this fake world for her. She doesn't remember what it's like to be a werewolf. So there's these nice, genuine moments between her and her wolf father when they reunite, where he has to retrain her on her gifts. And to get that back. And those are some of my favorite moments in this whole thing.
Very, very Logan-esque when I think about that movie. Logan.
But nothing like Logan, like in any.
No, in the sense where he has to train somebody how to be, you know, the superhero that they are. The train them to the powers that they have is where I say there's a similarity. But it's you know, really cool. And I love it when he teaches her how to smell. He's like, what do you smell? And she's like, I smell shit. And he's like, yeah, but smell past.
Smell past the shit. Yeah, I love that.
Because all animals, when you smell, like, what is the first thing? They must smell shit all the time. Yep. And, like, they get used to it because it gives them information. Like, I swear sometimes my dog will, like, sniff another dog's shit and be like, hey, what'd you say about me? Fuck you. You
know, like, so true.
His reaction is like they wrote it on a bathroom wall or something. Yeah. You know, some shit talk. And is like, they get information from it, like what's here, what's there, where the poison is, where the good food is, you know, it tells them things. So I think that was really important that you smell that, and then where does it take you? And I kind of love using that as a power. And what is the super smell? And it's one of those ones that, like, I think people think super smell would be stupid, and like it isn't glamorous or flashy. Like, I don't think there's an X-Men who's like, I got super smell and it's awesome. I'm sure some of them do. Like, I know Wolverine has super smell, but like, if you had super smell, you would have so much information.
So much. And you do in this. Yeah. Like, we exploited that to its like nth degree. Like the super smell as a vehicle of how they get back to find things. And it's just so eloquently, you know, written in that way. We really exploit that stuff. My favorite, and this is a good moment for our listeners too, when we're thinking of things and notes and all of that, like, we got to that moment where we loved that line, right? It was like, what do you smell? The father says, and she says, I smell shit, right? And then, you know, we're like, well, in order for her to say shit and curse, how does she know the word shit, right? Because we love that line so much, we're like, we're going to figure this out. And that's because that's what writers do. They're problem solvers, and they fit the puzzle together. So we went back, right? And we're like, we're going to have fake father swear very easily. But then we tied that into another great moment. Got to read the screenplay to find out. But, you know, we tied that into another moment. And he says he curses, but he expects more of them, right? Yeah. And we had to add a moment where, like, he curses a few times, and then in the house, you know, she has a curse word, and he says, watch your language, and she says, you know, something to him. But we had to, like, develop that.
Smart man. Shit, yeah.
So we did, you know, we did a lot of, like, a lot of this, Aaron, right? And we said this too. As we finished it, we kept going back, and then everything we wrote later informed things from the beginning, and that's why rewriting is writing.
100%. Here's another example, and it comes into what I personally, my one of my tasks was kind of figuring out how the cult worked. That was like, we kind of divided up different portions of it, and you're like, I'm handling this chase scene. You handled a lot of these big action sequences, and I was like, well, I'm going to take on this cult scene. And one of the hardest things about developing a cult in a movie is there's so much that is never on screen and never said, but you have to develop an ethos of why they exist and why they do what they do. And we knew, because we wrote the outline, X, Y, and Z has to happen. Mm-hmm. They have to get from A to B, but I needed to figure out where and what lines they said that made their ethos work for their actions. And a cult thinks crazy stuff. That's why they're a cult. You know, they think stuff way outside the norm. So we had to come up with, like, what their belief system was, why they were doing what they're doing, and make sure that you didn't delve into it too much so the audience isn't over dissecting why the cult is doing what they're doing, but also gave away enough that when the audience did have questions, it made sense from what you saw in the movie.
Right.
So you have to lay clues early on. And that was such a stack of cards, because they're doing crazy stuff. They're capturing werewolf blood, trying to do
stuff.
The ceremony for the moon.
The kiss is my favorite.
Kiss,
no, don't give that away, but the gory kiss with sacrificial blood, one of my favorite moments. There are gross out moments in this thing.
Yeah, we wanted it to be fun and gross and gory, but, you know, but trying to figure out how a cult thinks just so your script makes sense is wild and fun, but also very difficult, because you're like, early on this happened. Well, I need them to say this so that later on this makes sense to why they're doing that. And this makes sense for what their whole goal is. But at the end of the day, like, you rarely see any of it play out. But you have to build up a much bigger world in your mind for what they're doing and why they're doing it, what the ethos is of your crazy people. It was fun, but it was very tricky.
Yeah, and at the end, I think when someone reads this thing, right, and when we've read it a million times already, right, and rewritten, I mean, how many drafts have we written? Probably like 30 drafts, 40 drafts, something crazy like that. But, like, when someone finishes this, what you just said there reminds me, you know what, like, the end of The Goonies, where he's like, they're, like, all, like, talking to their parents in the rocks, right? Like, they got out of the cave. And then the octopus, which never happened it was a deleted scene, right? And he's like, and then the octopus came. Like, octopus, oh, my God. And they're like, and then there was a gold, and then there was a treasure, and there was this. That's this screenplay. right? Like, yeah. That's when you look back, you're like, oh, then there was the kiss, and then there was the moment with the thing, and the cannon, and the convenience store, and the cape, and the moon. It's like, that's what I think people sound like after they read this thing, at least all the notes that come back. It's so exciting.
It really is. I'm working on a pitch packet now, and we have the, I want to read some of the log lines, okay?
So yes, I have read, a couple. Read. Read some of our log lines here.
Here's a log line. A young woman leaves behind the safety of her home to destroy the forces that keep her and her sister trapped in isolation. Boom.
Now, simple, not giving anything away. Because we didn't want to give anything much away, right?
I mean, we've given away that there's werewolves
involved. Well,
now we did. But we did. But I think you don't sell this movie with werewolves. You sell this movie as family.
Yes.
Because
I so
you
agree.
Want that. You want that Dusk Till Dawn moment, yep, where suddenly the movie changes and you're like, what am I watching?
Yes.
And I
yes.
want people to leave being like, and then this happens, yep, and then that happens, and the octopus and the
and the octopus. No, I mean, we really go on with the log lines in a second, but we really, you know, when we were going through this, we're like, I said to you, I'm like, by page 23, no later than page 23, 24, the big twist needs to be revealed. Everything needs to be turned on its head. We need to, it's almost three different movies, right? It's the cult creepy weirdness of the beginning, like Rosemary Baby style. Then page, yep, 23, 24, like not much into the film, you hit them with that boom, and then you're gone for the entire, yep, rest of the screenplay. And
the action takes off
more twists, more turns. But like, I didn't want that to get past page like 24, 20, you know, that,
yeah,
page.
It can't.
Because we needed to hook people and really shove that twist in there really quick. I love the ride. I love that. And I can see this through most of my screenplays, is I love the what is in the beginning and what happens between the beginning and the end. At the end, you've taken that journey. You've taken a true ride. Because my favorite films, the movie ends, the credits roll, and I feel like I have taken this extraordinary journey, like Hook. like yeah. Hook, I've gone to Neverland and I've come back and I've, you know, I've learned that family is the most important thing to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's a true journey.
Of course, the first Matrix took me on that, yeah, ride where I was like, robots and the world's not, yes, real and kung fu bullet time. Like, the first Matrix took me on a ride. I think there's a lot of movies that do that. You know, it's fun. Yeah. Here's another one. This is a joke, okay, one. A bratty little girl does everything she's told and the man she thinks is her father dies because of it.
I feel like that's the foreign sales lock line. Like, when you have that disconnect between like cultures, it's like, I don't know what culture that one is, but like it could be used somewhere.
It's so funny. Yeah. And then the last one, and I think we'll just leave them with this. Two words, super wolves.
Yes! Super wolves. Yes, two words, super wolves. I love that. I feel like that's like the third poster generation once people have kind of seen the film. It's like the style like D poster that comes out after it's been out for a few weeks. Two words, super wolves. Yeah. Yes, we have invented a species of wolves.
Yes.
Super wolves.
They're really big.
They're really fucking big and they're really scary. Never before have you seen a super wolf. It's true. I think of like Troll Hunter, right? Like that big kind of wolf.
But
you'll have to read the screenplay, but like the super wolves, this is a race that's the intention behind a lot of things. So two words, super wolves.
Super wolves.
No, yeah.
The elevator
super
pitch.
Wolves. Yeah. That's how you have to say it.
Super wolves.
Super wolves.
They call it an elevator pitch because people used to run onto an elevator to catch some studio executive and be like, all right, picture this, boss. I got this idea. Blah, 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 blah. They try to get, yeah, like, yeah, by the time the elevator got to where they were going, the executive was like, I love this idea. Let's
print it.
That never happens. Yeah. Usually the doors go ding, and they're like, security, this,
yeah,
guy.
And they've already sold it through.
Yeah. So it's like, the elevator pitch is just, all right, picture this. Two words, super wolves.
That is... If I saw you in an elevator, I'm an exec at Universal Studios, the main office, and I'm going up an elevator and you run in with that chopping mall shirt on and you stand next to me and you're like, two words, super wolves. I would be,
super
this,
wolves.
The elevator would like go up and down five times. I mean.
Tell me more.
Tell me.
Yeah. Like.
Well.
I need to find out what that means, and don't care how long it takes. I'll be like, yes, I just hit that stop button on the elevator. People are trapped on all floors. Everybody's like, what is happening? Sorry, guys. Super Wolf. Sorry. Our bad. Sorry.
We digress. But going back to the actual pitch deck, we are doing a pitch deck. I think this is super cool, super important. It looks really cool. Aaron, you're using like your art skills for the poster and stuff like that for the cover page. Yeah. It's got log lines. It's got, you know, character motivation. It's got who we would want to cast. We cast this thing out, right? I mean, we know somewhat who we like love to see in these roles, which will help you envision, you know.
You pick sort of characters that it's like kind of like them if we can't get them, you know, something like that, you know, when you do a pitch deck. And like, I've done a lot of pitch decks and I love pitch decks. They're a really fun way to sort of explore your thing. And it's also like putting an idea onto paper in a way that's like palatable to other people. Mm-hmm. And you realize like, how do I explain this to somebody? And you try and write it out and you have to figure out how to do it in a short package that makes people go, yep. Give that money, you know.
Even for a comic book idea, I mean, this will work all around for anything we want to turn this into, graphic novel, you know, anything. But I think it's going to be super cool. I know you're working really hard on it, and it's you were kind of doing it in conjunction, right, with these festivals, and we're hitting all the ground. You just got to like hit all the points, right? Festivals. We're going to start putting together our like query emails and our lists and sending those out. And then the pitch deck will be ready. And so we're just going to assault everyone in 2022 with Daughters of the Moon first phase. Get ready.
First phase.
It's coming. Super
Wolves. Super Wolves.